So in the last episode, we closed the book on the reign of Haitian President Jean-Pierre Boyer, and so too did we end an era of Haitian history. Many historians comment on how for the first 40 years of her history, Haiti was ruled by just four leaders, Dessalines, Christophe, Pétion, and Boyer. These first four Haitian leaders, alongside our old friend Toussaint Louverture, are the most influential group of people in Haitian history, except for maybe the Duvaliers. And so to close out this chapter of Haitian history, and to open the next chapter of Haitian history, I want to briefly list off some of the consequences these five leaders still have on Haiti and on her history. To begin chronologically, we must start with Toussaint Louverture. He was the first leader of Haiti, and he kind of began the idea of Haiti as an independent country. I mean, he created the first constitution of Haiti. Toussaint also established that the military was the administration of the country, and that power came from the military. I will talk about this concept a lot in 2055, when I cover the rule of the Duvaliers. But I think you can draw a line from the gangs that overthrew Aristide all the way back to Toussaint Louverture. As for Toussaint's successor, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, his great contribution was the creation of the messy relationship and rivalry between Haiti and the Dominican Republic with his 1805 invasion. An invasion so racked with war crimes that many Dominicans to this day hate Dessalines. As we will see later in this episode, this invasion gave Haitian leaders the idea that they could and should rule a united island. I should also mention that he is by far the most well-known and well-remembered. It is actually around 1843 when Dessalines begins to be rehabilitated as a hero of the revolution. Because, you know, most Haitians in 1843 weren't alive when he was emperor. Next, we have Christophe. Christophe kind of represents a different future for Haiti. In an alternate timeline, Christophe wins the Civil War, and Haiti becomes some kind of insane feudal black monarchy. But that didn't happen. In the end, Christophe gives little contributions to Haitian history because the Haitian people chose poverty, freedom, and happiness over the wealth and slavery promised by Christophe's system. If any man can be truly called the father of Haiti, it is Alexandre Pétion. So many of the institutions of the Haitian Republic can be traced back to Papa Bonkor. He, intentionally or unintentionally, completely reinvented the Haitian economy and allowed ex-slaves to achieve the dream of true black freedom. This economic system defined Haitian economics all the way up until deforestation and urbanization. Over a century later, he created the Haitian currency, the gourde, which is still the currency used by Haiti to this day, with some modifications, of course. He created the Haitian flag and coat of arms. And then, of course, there are his effects on the Haitian government. I mean, he introduced the bicameral legislature to Haiti, with a more democratic Chamber of Deputies or House of Representatives, in addition to the more elite Senate. A lot of his Constitution of 1816 lives on in Haiti to this day. But Pétion also has a negative impact. He created the idea that the Republican president is the sole ruler of Haiti. As you have probably picked up by now, I am a massive Pétion fanboy, and he sticks out among Haitian leaders as a genuinely good person and a beloved leader, which cannot be said about any of the four other leaders. Boyer also introduced a lot to Haiti, but his effects were far more on the negative side. I speak now of the indemnity, of his entrenchment of personal authoritarianism, his abandonment of education projects, and his repression of the House of Representatives. All of these things I've talked about a lot, so I won't go too far in depth for them. There are two things, though, that I want to point out. Number one is the rule of the elites. Boyer himself was not corrupt, But under his reign, wealthy colored elites, forced out of the plantation economy, began looking to the government as a way to gain wealth. Another one of Boyer's effects was how he left power. Rather than sticking around and getting shot, Boyer got out while the getting was good, and so he managed to survive and live a pretty comfortable exile. This set a precedent for future Haitians. It showed them how easy it was to overthrow the presidents, and it showed presidents that they shouldn't go into exile early. Unlike many revolutionary countries, Haiti does not kill its coup leaders. Boyer went first to Jamaica, and then went on to live a fairly comfortable retirement in Paris, even being welcomed to France by the French king. Alright, so back to the fun stuff. Last episode, Boyer was overthrown by the revolutionary army of Charles Herard and Herard du Mals. Charles Herard entered the capital of Port-au-Prince on the 21st of March. He was greeted by a state of what Thomas Madeau calls delirious enthusiasm. Port-au-Prince looked like any city after a great revolution, with people celebrating and waving white flags from their houses, as white had become the color of the revolution. Herard entered the city about a week after Boyer had left, bringing with him about 17,000 soldiers. When Boyer had left, he had given a prophecy saying that Herard would not last a year, and that he would soon be devoured by the people's passions he had unleashed. In this episode, Herard will prove Boyer right. Also, just a note for this episode, I crammed Herard's entire presidency into this one episode, so it is a very long episode, not as in-depth as usual, and I'm going to have to move very fast through it. So having caught the car, the revolutionaries now had to figure out what to do with it. The first thing they did, even before they arrived in Port-au-Prince, was to issue a decree charging a group of the top Boyer leaders of treason and as accomplices to treason, with the assumption that many of them would soon go into exile. This group included Beobrun Ardouin, who I've mentioned many times, as he is one of the great historians from this period. But in 1843, Ardouin moved from writing the history to being a main player in it, and we will get to him and his brother Seligny, another exile, in a second. Herard also created a provisional government composed of a council of 5 men, including himself, many of whom were just high-ranking Boyer bureaucrats. Herard was, of course, more or less the provisional president of Haiti, since it would be about 9 months before he was officially elected. The most notable member of this government, though, was a guy named Gruyère, who I've also mentioned. He was an old black Christophe general known for his military competence. Like the Ardouin brothers, I will come back to him at the very end of today's episode. One of Herard's first mistakes was to try to replace the Haitian military elite rather than trying to co-opt it. In Herard's mind, institutional control of the military gave him political authority, so he went around handing out epaulettes to his civilian friends. While Herard did not remove many of the generals and officers who were in the army before the revolution, these guys were discontented with this policy. Many others saw this for what it was, Herard trying to base his strength and power inside the military. Another mistake Herard made was removing himself from the action. In these months of spring and summer 1843, the revolution was shaky at best. It would have made a lot of sense for Herard to be in Port-au-Prince consolidating his own power and managing the government. But instead, in summer 1843, Herard chose to go on an extended tour of the north and east with his army. Herard wasted valuable time he could have spent consolidating his power and government because of this. This military tour of the East fueled Dominican resentment against the Haitians. Many Dominicans were already plotting revolt and independence, and now they got a chance to observe the Haitian army. They saw how disorganized it was. They also saw the immorality of the Haitians. To quote Maduro, the Haitian army, quote, had little respect for Dominican women or Dominican property, unquote. Herard also arrested many people he thought were planning a Dominican revolt, including some priests, and he dissolved a popular Dominican government in Santo Domingo City, which he, of course, replaced with Haitians. Herard was very unpopular among the Dominicans, but he would soon become almost equally unpopular among the rural peasants. In the rural south of the country, always a hotbed for rebellion, questions of race and class swirled. Many black farmers hated the coloreds and wanted to overthrow not just Boye, but the entire colored aristocracy. They wanted social change as well as political reform. A group of these guys revolted in Jeremy with peasants, but the peasants soon surrendered and the leaders were executed. In Lacaille, after a highly contested election for a member of the Constituent Assembly, an assembly I'll get to soon, a group of blacks revolted from just outside the city. But an army commanded by Gerard Dumas attacked this band of rebels and caused them to retreat far into the countryside. Soon, however, an amnesty and peace was negotiated between the rebels and Dumas. In a show of great unity, the rebels returned to Lacaille alongside government soldiers. Despite this, racial tensions continued to run high in the South. A great anecdote from this is the people began painting statues of the Virgin Mary black to show, like, the race war. Yet another failed revolt, which was completely unrelated, came in September after Herard had returned to Port-au-Prince. There, a group of officers from the Artibonite department created a plan to revolt with their soldiers and overthrow Herard and replace him with one of their own, General Guerriere. General Guerriere was in on this, but he kept a short distance from the revolt. On the night of September 9th, a few of the conspirators went around trying to get soldiers to join a revolt. But Herard was still pretty popular, although his popularity was fading fast. Their leader was shot by a common soldier as he tried to launch his coup. After that, the military was organized for Herard, and they crushed the rebels. Ultimately, 12 people were imprisoned after this, and 3 were executed. However, General Guerriere escaped punishment for this, although his involvement was known. This is not the last plot to replace Herard with Guerriere that we will discuss. After this revolt, Herard and the provisional government declared martial law across Haiti, although not, like, that strict martial law. They banned gatherings of more than 15 people and allowed the army to break up any protests and shoot at unarmed civilians. The penalty for organizing an armed protest was now death. Anyone could now be tried by military court if they were accused of sedition. This seems to have been totally unenforceable, just serving to tick off more and more people. Despite this declaration of supposed martial law, it was now time for a civilian government to become the national government. See, the revolutionaries wanted a new liberal constitution which would embody the ideals of the revolution. To do this, the revolutionaries chose to convene a constituent assembly to write a constitution. 106 delegates elected from across Haiti and the East came to the constituent assembly, although many did not show up. These delegates included Dumas, who would soon become the president of the assembly. They took on a role as not just the writers of the Constitution, but also as legislators. One piece of legislation they published amnestied a few of Boye's ruling party who had been charged with as accomplices to treason. including the Arduin brothers, who had returned to Haiti to be thrown in prison. For the Constitution itself, a 15-person group was assigned to create the basis for the Constitution. When they were done, the Assembly built off of, edited, and approved the Constitution from their basis, section by section. The Dominican delegates came to the Constituent Assembly with two key requests. They wanted an end to the government policies that were prejudiced against the whites, because many Dominicans considered themselves to be white. The second policy that they wanted was that they wanted the Catholic Church as the state religion. Both policies were rejected, giving the Dominicans even more grievances against the Haitian government. The Constituent Assembly continued its work through the months of November and December. They ratified the Constitution on December 31st and chose Herard as president that same day. I'm not going to go into the Constitution of 1843, like I have with past constitutions, just because it doesn't really matter. But the big thing you need to know is that this is the point when Herard, his allies in the military, and Dumas all break with the revolution. The Constitution turned out far more liberal than Herard had wanted. It claimed that the Senate and President would be elected by the people, and that the President would be elected every 4 years. It replaced a lot of the centralized military administration with local civilian administration. Herard, Dumas, and many of the other quote-unquote revolutionaries were in actuality scared of real revolution and feared what revolution and democracy would do to Haiti. They were far more scared of the illiterate masses getting control of the government than they were of the old Boyerists. On January 2nd, 1844, Herard swore to uphold the Constitution. By then, he had already begun his plans to destroy it and the assembly that had created it. In February 1844, Herard's popularity was waning. The old Boyer loyalists obviously hated him. The peasants, farmers, hated him for being rich, colored, and for not seeming to care about the issues that affected them. Northerners and northern military officers would have preferred to see one of their own as president. The Constituent Assembly, which took over as the Legislative Assembly because there was no governmental assembly yet, was becoming increasingly hostile towards him. Everywhere, plots and conspiracies began to be formed. The most important of these was a plot by Beobrun and Seligny Arduin to replace Herard with Guerriere. Then, in February, the government was kicked into crisis when they received the news that the Dominicans had revolted. It was the age of nationalism, and the Haitians and Dominicans were just not the same nationality. Dominican patriotism was widespread, and the Dominicans believed that the time was right to finally create their own country. In the East, after the revolution which overthrew Boyer, a large underground party emerged, whose goal was to separate Santo Domingo from Haiti. This movement was widespread and known about by the local government in Santo Domingo, which took steps such as disarming people and arresting leaders. In late February, a large group of Dominican separatists met in Santo Domingo and created a plan for a revolt. They created a plan for a junta to take power, and created a new flag, which was supposed to be the Haitian flag, with a white cross across it, and no coat of arms. On February 26th, at 11 o'clock, a revolt broke out in Santo Domingo City. After 2 days of success, the garrison of Santo Domingo City surrendered. They took control of the city. 2,000 countrymen came to the city to join the revolt. The leaders in Port-au-Prince soon found out about this revolt. They made the mistake you often hear about idiot dictators making, where they assumed that the majority of Dominicans were on their side and that it was only a small group of radicals who wanted independence. So the Constituent Assembly ordered Herard to marshal an army and march on Santo Domingo City. The National Guard and army were both mobilized and called to service, creating an army 30,000 strong to invade Santo Domingo. For some context, the population of the country of Santo Domingo was 60 to 80,000 at the time. Gerard and about 20,000 guys marched southeast to the city of Azua, while another 10,000 marched north. That is where I will leave Santo Domingo for this episode. This was a crisis, but it was not the crisis that would bring down Gerard. Gerard left Dumas in power in Port-au-Prince, and had likely given him permission to launch a coup against the Constituent Assembly. Finding them criticizing himself and Gerard, and pretending to have real authority, Dumas and Gerard decided to shut down the Constituent Assembly. They were backed by many powerful military officers who likewise despised the Liberal Assembly. On March 31st, Dumas declared the Constituent Assembly dissolved, and he sent guards to prevent them from entering. Dumas also declared the creation of a dictatorship. Dumas had come full circle. Gerard was Boyer, and Dumas was the new Injinac. His revolution was over. But although this was the end of the revolution, at least for now, for Dumas and the old opposition and the people of Port-au-Prince, this was just the beginning for others. With the army distracted, the farmers and peasants now saw their chance to get what they wanted. In the countryside and the mountains, the Creole-speaking peasants had little access to information, and so rumors spiraled. The Constitution, which Dumas had just destroyed, was viewed as a protecting force for them. There were rumors about the return of plantation agriculture, authoritarian government, and even slavery. These infuriated the peasants, who were already angry at Gerard and Dumas. From the city of Camp Perrin, just north of Lacaille, a man named Aku declared a revolt against Gerard's government. Quickly, thousands of peasants joined him. These peasants came to be known as the Army of the Sufferers. Along with guns, they armed themselves with 8 to 10 foot pikes, often tipped with poison. This gave them the name the Piquettes. Aku marched on Lacaille, passing through many smaller towns. In one town, Aku summoned a crowd to the sound of a conch shell, and, alluding to his peasant nature, vowed not to change his clothes until he had fulfilled his divinely given orders. He said that God called on him to expel the coloreds and to divide up their property. At this, the crowd looked uncomfortably at the lighter-skinned peasants among them. But Aku assured them that they too were black. Then a man came forward from the crowd and exclaimed, quote, "The rich black who can read or write is a mulatto. The poor mulatto who can't read or write is black." Mulatto is what the coloreds were referred to at the time. Aku and his army have been described as black communists, and in many ways they kind of were. They wanted social change. They wanted more land. They wanted to be paid more for their goods and to pay less for foreign goods. They wanted an end to the colored aristocracy and an end to the dominance of foreign merchants. But they also had political demands. They wanted education for their children, and they wanted actual democratic government in Haiti. These were the reasons they went into revolt. On April 4th, Aku captured Lacaille without a fight. His army did not loot or pillage the city. Another peasant army, inspired by Aku, captured the city of Jeremie. From Lacaille, Aku moved towards Port-au-Prince, but his advance was stopped at the town of Akane by government soldiers. There, a fierce battle was fought, but ultimately, Aku could not take the city. This did not stop his revolt, though. The big effect of the start of the Aku uprising was lining everyone in Port-au-Prince up against Dumas and Gerard. Everyone in Port-au-Prince, from staunch Boyer conservatives to apolitical commoners, to the liberals from the Constituent Assembly, were terrified of a coup. They all thought that he was coming to, like, sack the capital and turn the world upside down. And now people were willing to do whatever it took to stop him. Bayo Brun and Coligny's Ardouin small conspiracy to replace Herard with Guerriere ballooned after this revolt, and soon the entire government in Port-au-Prince was in on it. People just did not think that Herard had the strength to defeat a coup, and believed that having the black Guerriere as president would get a coup to back down. In addition, the coloreds that ran this conspiracy believed that they could easily control Guerriere, and that he would just be a figurehead for them. It should be noted here that Guerriere was drunk. This practice of coloreds choosing a puppet sewn of black fabric is going to start happening a lot. On May 3rd, the conspirators, including most of the government in Port-au-Prince, went to Guerriere and offered him the presidency. He was half drunk, and so he had to be cajoled a little to accept. All the soldiers in Port-au-Prince and all the citizens were soon on Guerriere's side. Later that day, Bayo Brun Ardouin gathered a crowd and read to them a manifesto declaring Guerriere president. Boyer was right. It may have taken longer than he thought, but the people's passions had consumed Charles Herard and Herard Dumas.